You're the best, brother.
All right. So, without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Sal from Santa Maria.
Thank you. I'm Sal, and I'm an alcoholic. And if you say that fast, it's alcoholic. So a lot of people know me as alcoholic. It's an honor to be here. Thank you, Stan, and the rest of the group. I'm going to start off by starting from ground zero. I was born and raised in Santa Maria, California, and I was raised in a good, loving home. I was raised by my great grandma, and I was raised with my twin brother, and that lady showed me all the love that a person could give their grandchild. She was like my mother to me. I was kind of raised like a little girl. We were really sheltered. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't play any sports. And I just remember learning a lot from her. She showed me how to cook for myself, to clean for myself every Saturday morning. We had to clean the walls and do a lot. She was chair ridden, so her last years, I had to take her to the restroom and help clean herself and do a lot of things that young boys don't do. It was an honor for me to do for my great grandma because she showed me how to do everything, how to live life, but she didn't show me how to live without her. And that brings me to about the age of 13. And a lot of things happened when I was 13 years old. She passed away when I was 13. And then at the same time, I got my first job as a paperboy at the age of 13. And I started to, prior to that, we weren't allowed to leave the block. So once I got my first job as a paperboy, I was allowed to leave the block. So I was attracted to old like the Mexican culture, lowriders, and then the dark side of it was the gangs in Santa Maria, the Chicano heritage, and I was attracted to, I don't know, for one reason I wanted to be part of something. And I knew that gangs would get me somewhere. When my grandma died, I was hurt and broken. And how can my higher power take away this lady that showed me how to do everything? So to summarize everything, I was broken, and I found love with hanging out. I hung around with guys, and I really didn't understand too much, but I knew that I was accepted, and these guys were they were twice my age, and it's like that one gangster movie where I forgot what it's called, but it's a young boy and it's the Italian mob, and he's well accepted into their group, and he does favors and he does this, and I remember Super Bowl, football season would come by, and that's where my drinking started. They were drinking probably 18 packs at the time, but I would drink a tall boy, and it would take me, the whole football game to drink that one beer. But once I drank that beer, I was accepted, and I would be able to hang around with these older guys, and some of those guys are still my friends today. We changed our lives, have changed for the better. Stan here has seen me at my worst. He was one of those guys I hung around with, and now we both wear skinny jeans. I don't know who's is tighter. It's funny, but I've been wearing these skinny jeans, and I get compliments from a lot of people, and it makes me feel good. So I used to be that wannabe big bad gangster, and then a part with gangs is the outside drugs, stuff, which is drugs, and then alcohol comes along with it. But I was involved. I was a wannabe. I never got jumped in, but I was gonna be, and I didn't I didn't have a problem hurting somebody else because my higher power took someone that I loved, so I felt hurt. And along with gangs is the prison life. And I haven't answered my own question, is why did I didn't have a problem spending the rest of my life in prison because of the prison gangs, prison politics, street politics, and other outside stuff. I lived my life like if I was in prison, but the only prison I was living was in my head. And I learned how to cook without a stove. I learned how to, in prison, we learned how to make our own alcohol. I could have easily went to the liquor store, but I always had my own alcohol made, knowing that if I was to run out of my beer of choice, I would have something in reserve. Along with that, I learned how to manufacture outside drugs also. And I'm not proud of that, but it was a scary, scary thing. I was talking to someone earlier, and they're all, how'd you learn how to drink alcohol? And it was funny because I read about alcohol in a I think high school library. You know, it's like, how did I learn a lot of things? And I talked about, like, my passion was always cars, lowriders, and this program here has brought me to becoming who I wanted to be my whole life. I think I'm gonna jump around, but today I get to work on those lowrider cars. I get to work on $100,000 cars, show cars, different kinds of cars. And it's because of this program has brought me to become the person I always wanted to be. And now let me jump back to being that 13-year-old boy. For me, I started off at 13, 14, 15, in my early 20s. It was all a party. It was a lot of good times, drinking and doing outside drugs was because I do both fellowships, and I know we're here at this fellowship, and I don't want to get it crossed, but it was a party, and I can't believe that 20 years passed by, and I was still partying, a lot of partying. Never really got in trouble by the law, but the thing is, where I knew how to drink, and I would do it for 3 or 4 years, and then I would stop on my own. And then I would wait a year, and then I would go party again. And then I would sober up for years at a time, and then I would go back to drinking. And I was always partying with, friends, and I never had something to bring me to my knees. But, as years went by, it wasn't fun anymore. I was getting older. I was hurting myself in my own feelings. And I didn't know that I was hurting on the inside. And I wasn't that 13-year-old boy no more. I was in my 20s and starting my 30s. And I still have that mentality of being a gangster. I don't know why. It's that Mexican culture and, the gangs. I was attracted to gangs, and for the longest time, I always wanted to be. And as soon as I stopped identifying as a gangster, then people started calling me like, "Hey, homie," or "Hey, dude," or "Hey, OG." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, I'm not no OG." But it's like, if you walk like a duck, you're gonna act like a duck. And I became really, really intrigued with gangs, and it was just a scary time. I never did any jail time, and I'm not trying to say that I was too smart for my bridges, but I was too smart to play with that fire, and then once I had the fire in my hands, I would throw it back, and I never got in trouble at all, because I thought if I was gonna get in trouble, it was gonna be for something worth it, and I never had to do any time. I think I did like 2 days in jail, so part of the jail thing is that. With 7 years sober, I signed up for H&I, and I get to do a lot of H&I. I haven't been there lately because they have COVID in there. I don't want to get infected. COVID's back again, so it's really limited. And I get to go in once a week, and I get to share my story with the inmates. That's all I wanted was to, and this program has given me a chance to go in for an hour, walk through that front door, and then walk right back out. And I was always scared of the sheriffs, always scared of the police, and I have good interactions with them today. I'm a good citizen. I live an honest life. And 7 years ago when I surrendered, and I actually wanted to be part of this program, I seen that this program worked for him. I seen it work for my cousin. And I seen it work for my twin brother. Me and my twin brother, we grew up together. So we lost our grandma at the same time. We started doing the same things at the same time. He hung around with guys our age, and I still kept on hanging out with the guys older than me. So, you know, I didn't have to prove myself. I seen my brother like always wanting to prove himself and do things and always getting in trouble. And then he led his life, but he has 13 years sober. So I knew that this program was gonna work for him. But then I thought about it, it's like, how is it gonna work for me? This program is not gonna work. So 7 years ago I surrendered, and it took me 4 years to get a sponsor and do the steps that are suggested. I didn't believe in myself. It took me 4 years to do my steps, and I didn't believe that I was gonna stick around. But once those 4 years went by, I was driving with my twin brother and my sister-in-law, and she's like, something was happening in my life, nothing major, but I was like a broken record, like, hey Joey, this is happening, and I don't know how to deal with this, and my sister-in-law, that which is a normie. She goes, Sal, haven't you thought about doing your steps? And she called me out on my BS. And I go, whoa. Like, she's right. Like she's seen my brother grow. And my sister-in-law has always believed in me. And, you know, she's been in the family for like 20-something years. And once she said that, then that's when I started getting busy. And, you know, 3 years ago, I completed my steps. And it's been a game changer. You know, now that, you know, I always looked up to my twin brother, and it's something that how he spoke and how he walked, I always wanted that. And, you know, 7 years later, I sound like my brother. I still attend a lot of meetings. I stay active. And once I did my steps, I thought, I'm protected. I could work these steps. Everything's good. I'm protected. But 3 months ago, my mom suffered a brain aneurysm. And, you know, I didn't know this was going to happen. You know, I grieved my grandmother. I did the steps on her, on some of my steps and my fourth step. And I let things go. And I made amends to everybody. And I'll go back to my mom right now. But I made amends. And for a long time ago, my brother has more years than me, and he hasn't made amends. But the day that I made amends to my twin brother, I sat him down in his kitchen table, and I go, hey, I'm ready to do the seventh step, right?
Ninth step.
So I was ready to do my ninth step with my brother, and I sat him down, and I go, I need to make amends with you. And he said, okay. So we sat down, and then I was going to get up, and he's like, wait a minute. I have to do my amends with you. And we started crying at the end. He made his amends, and he says something in the lines like, I didn't make my amends to you because you didn't finish your steps, and I knew that one day you were gonna finish your steps, and it would have made sense for me to make amends without you finishing your steps. And I go, well, thank you. So, you know, we still grow together. Sometimes we bump heads, but, you know, at the end of the day, we know how to work together. 3 months ago, my mom suffered a brain aneurysm, and that brought me to my knees. I thought, you know, I lost my grandma. You know, there's nothing in this world that's gonna break me. Like, I've been hurt, so I was hurt by my own doing. And then losing the lady that I love, that showed me how to do everything, I thought that nothing would break me. So I had my armor on. I was protected. I was doing everything right, living a good program. And 3 months ago, my mom suffered a brain aneurysm, and that brought me to my knees. I had no clue how this was going to end up. And she was airlifted to Santa Barbara Cottage Hospital, and she flew in an airplane, and I flew in a truck, and I got there at the same time she did. And I signed the papers for the doctor to save her life, and that doctor saved her life. And that night, I was in the parking lot, and I was on my knees, because we were, 7 years ago when I surrendered, she was the one calling the sheriffs every day, wanting her son back. And this program has gave her son back to her. So, we're really close. She's seen me grow, and we would text every morning. I would go to her house every day for a cup of coffee. We knew where we were at all times of the day, and every night she would text me goodnight. So, when she suffered that brain aneurysm, she suffered a stroke. She was in ICU for a month, and then they released her. And she wasn't 100%, and she's in a recovery home now. And she's been there for 2 months, and this program has been there for me. I went to a meeting that the next day it happened, and I shared openly of what was going on, because I didn't know what to do. Some of the members came up to me after, and there's one particular member, she came up to me, and I didn't have hope that my mom was gonna get better. I didn't have hope that this program worked. I kind of lost hope, but she told me that something, that my mom was gonna be okay, and that she worked with people that suffered aneurysms and strokes. And she showed me some exercises to do with her, some card games to play with her. And that gave me hope. And then there was another member that called me every day, as Joel. I barely met him, and he called every single day to check on me, every single day. There's other members that call, and throughout the 7 years, Billy's one of them that, I'm not afraid to ask for help. And there was one year that I was going through something, and I went through all my phone list, and I think Billy was, I didn't want to bug Billy because I didn't know him that good, but I went through that phone list, and I called Billy, and I asked him something, and we talked for like hours, and then I was like, "Oh, it's not that bad. I'm gonna get through it." But I've been because of this program, and it showed me how to be a service. My mom's at an acute center, a recovery place, and I've been able to navigate with administration, the kitchen, her diet, the nurses, the CNAs. I've been able to make my rounds in that whole building, where every day they ask me, "Do you want a job here? Do you want a job here?" And I spend 5 to 6 hours a day for the first month there with her. But I go, "No, thank you. I'm not interested at the time." In a way, I became my mom's eyes, ears, mouth, and legs and hands. And my mom has gotten better. As of today, we're getting ready to bring her home. So. I couldn't have been myself without this program. Going back to that 13-year-old boy where I was stubborn and I wanted to do things my way, and my way was, it was only my way or the highway. If I had to do something wrong 10 different times, I was going to do it wrong 10 different times. I never liked asking for help. And I learned how to. Now if someone gives me a suggestion, they say, "Hey, Sal, you should do it this way," I'm going to take that suggestion because I don't want to do things the hard way. I started, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, now that I was sober, I started my dream job. And it's, I had off and on jobs. I did construction. I did a lot of things. I, you know, security. They offered me a job at my mom's facility as a CNA, and they said it would send me back to school. But something that, when I was younger, the Chicano heritage and the lowriders, and I think I repeated this, but I get to work on those cars today. You know, when you work with the best, you become the best. And there's some things where I know I stay teachable, but I'm also, my current boss, he's been in the industry for about 40 or 50 years. And, you know, I get to work and we collaborate. He asks me my opinion. I says, like, wow, like, what do I deserve to be asked by this guy's a legend. He's in a lot of magazines. He does nice artwork and on these show cars, and it's because of this program, because this program has showed me that I kind of got lost. This program has showed me that I could believe in myself. I could have confidence, and always wanting to hang around with the wrong crowd and being part of something. When I surrendered 7 years ago, I found the love that I was always searching for in these rooms. You know, we're all created different, but when we have a problem, or you know, you guys have shown me how to have good times. You know, there's always Unity Day and activities and other stuff that I stay involved in. I think 4th of July, we had, like, at the other fellowship, they had, like, a 4th of July event. And it's like, wow, you know, you can't have fun doing things sober. Yeah, so I think I ran out of things to say, but I wasn't nervous until I got here. Yeah, that's how I got that. Thank you, guys.
All right, let's give our speakers a round of applause. Sal, thank you for coming out. We appreciate you, Sal, man. You're a good dude.